If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm Renee Swanson, your host, and I'm so glad to have you here today. And today I have Eleanor Marks back. And as always, it is such a privilege and just a fun time to talk with you, Eleanor. How are you doing today?
Doing great. We got some great questions today that I've been thinking a lot about all week. I've sat at a lot of baseball games and been mulling these over in my head. How's your week going?
My week is going great. It's been a full week with a lot of positive direction going with CNG, and I'm really, really happy about that. So
you back out on the Appalachian Trail?
Not yet. Maybe I haven't told my audience, we did knock out another 25 miles of it a week and a half ago. And it was awesome. I loved it, but we're not going to get to go in April. We're going to have to push it to May because April got a little busy on us.
Okay. All right. You're doing it though.
We are doing it.
Bit by bit.
One state at a time. So we're trying to get Georgia done. If we can get that started, that'll be a good, that's our goal for at least, you know, by the middle of summer to have Georgia done.
Easy peasy.
Yep. So let's get started with the questions today. We have a question that's kind of a part two of last week, or our second question from a same person. And the question is, she is wondering about helpful things to know when dealing with an attorney who only understands the general narcissist definition, but not all the underlying behavior issues that compose a covert narcissist. That is a loaded question.
Yeah, it definitely is. That term narcissist has gotten such a bad rap by society, and people assume that they know what it is and you know, poke fun at it because of the overtness and the exaggeration that it can be. But the whole other world of this covert part, and then you put it in the legal arena and it takes on a whole new form. For this question, I would first ask, you know, is their attorney doing a good job? Are they returning calls? Did the billing look normal within range? Are they addressing the issues and listening to you? If that's going well, that's kind of more than we can ask for sometimes. You can try to gently educate them, but attorneys sometimes don't want to be told to do or how they're doing it. So if there's nothing that's changing how things are moving for your case, I might let it go. But when the red flags really come up of when they are, you know, did that really happen? You're being dramatic. That sounds like an exaggeration. They don't take into account the full details of your story. And then they start changing their legal strategy because they think you are dramatic. Then it might be time to maybe voice your opinion. And if it's still not heard or understood, find a new attorney, finding one. How did you find an attorney?
So I interviewed. I did a free consultation with two different attorneys. And between the two, I just picked the one that I thought was the most understanding of my situation. And the two attorneys, one was really hard-nosed. She was, you know, definitely going to be balls to the walls kind of lawyer, kind of attorney. And the other one was more gentle. It was a guy that was a more gentle approach and a more peaceful approach. And I know that, you know, high conflict divorce, you think, okay, you got to have that hard-nosed attorney, but that didn't fit me. That's not my personality. And so I actually went with the more gentle, peaceful approach. And in my situation, that really worked well. But I could see how it's such a personal choice and such a personal path that it would depend on your situation. If mine, fortunately, my divorce was not high conflict. Of all the things I went through in this marriage, that was one of the most peaceful parts of the process. But people who are not experiencing that, you know, you did not have that experience with it, and it was a high conflict situation, you're going to have to pick an attorney that's going to match your situation. So how about you? How did you pick an attorney?
I asked friends around for attorney suggestions, and I was just looking for a divorce attorney. I was not quite privy that the way things would escalate. And so I just kind of went with somebody that I felt comfortable with. I've learned now that if you get like a bulldog attorney, right, that they're going to escalate the situation probably more than it needs to be. So sometimes the gentler attorney is definitely a good move. I see a lot of times people ask, well, what questions should I ask in that interviewing an attorney or that free consultation? And you can ask all the questions you want, and they're going to give you answers. But like, let's also look at how we got ourselves in this pickle of trusting somebody's words originally. You kind of got to look at maybe some reviews of them or friends that have referred you to them and dissect parts like that. One question that I would highly ask if I had to interview an attorney again is, what is your definition of a high conflict divorce? My first attorney told me that he had, you know, he had experience with difficult marriages and divorces, and I took his word on that. And as we were several months, probably closer to a year into this, I asked him, do you feel that my divorce is a high conflict divorce? And he laughed at me. He's like, no.
Wow.
And now I was interested in his, why he didn't think between, you know, all the sense of entitlement and the delays and the lies that we were able to prove. Why did you not think that this was high conflict? And he told me a story of what he considered high conflict was just a sexual fetish in a marriage. And when he was telling me this, I kind of like stopped, waiting for more, waiting for like the delays. And he just stopped at that and like, oh, that's all you think a high conflict divorce is. And you know, I feel silly, but my first mental response was, I would take that any day over right. dealing with all the other things that we are. So, and that is a big downtown Chicago attorney in a big firm. That was his definition. So interviewing a new attorney, I'm like, what would your definition be of it? And see what they come back with. Because you might be really surprised of what they would do and how they would handle it. There is an attorney reviewer, kind of like Yelp, for attorneys out there that you can go in and people leave reviews, good reviews, bad reviews. I looked it up the other day so I could like say it. It's avvo.com, and looking up attorneys there and seeing what other people have said that have come before you and really kind of taking other people's opinion into consideration, not just what the attorney tells you if you're interviewing them.
That's a great idea. And I love that question. What do you consider a high conflict divorce? I would not have thought of that. So I think that's great advice. And I think about, you know, even in my own marriage, how long did it take me to realize I was living in a high conflict marriage? It took years and I was living it every day. An attorney, I will say an attorney looking in and dealing with all the different marriages, a divorce attorney, all the different marriages that they're dealing with, they're getting snapshots and that's all they're getting. It's not possible for them to understand the full picture. Like if we had to pay that attorney for the amount of time it would take for them to really be that fly on the wall and see what's been going on for all these years in the marriage, you know, we'd all be broke, which, you know, a lot of us are anyways by the time the divorce happens. But it is really, I don't pity the attorneys who are trying to make sense out of this is what I'm saying.
Yeah. There's that umbrella of like, well, it takes two to take, you know, you must have had a 50-50 part in this of getting here to this divorce. And that lopsidedness isn't really shown through until you dig into the nitty gritty. right. after a while.
Right. I love my response to when somebody says, well, it takes two. And they're right. It takes two to make a marriage work. It only takes one to destroy it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to go on to our second question from Kathleen. She asks about the actual leaving part with kids. She was looking for examples of exit plans. What did the day or week literally look like? And she was very curious of the articulate child's reflection of splitting time between a chaotic, covert narcissistic parent and a more stable parent.
Okay, so this is a great question, a couple of parts in there to address. And I was thinking about that, you know, with the actual leaving, like what did that look like? The day, she says the day or the week. And I'm going to say my exit plan wasn't a day long or a week long. It was like 2 years long. So my exit plan started with, you know, when the decision inside of me of this marriage is not going to work and I am going to leave this marriage. And started taking the steps, and it was tiny steps at a time. But those steps were, you know, my own healing, getting the thoughts out of my head, the ruminating and the, you know, taking responsibility for all of this and really working through all of that. So that's a lot of what, you know, we've talked about on the podcast, all of these, you know, episodes. But I even started packing up some of the sentimental things that were mine that I didn't want to fight over with him when it came down to the nitty gritty. And so I boxed them up and I sent them over to a friend's house and said, can you just hang on to these for me? And they were there for like over a year. But that's okay. It was little steps like that that was empowering to me rather than just doing it all at once. I was not in a situation where I felt like, you know, I wasn't going to be running for my life. I wasn't, you know, in that situation where I had to leave in a dire moment. Instead, I had time to set this up so that by the time I came down to, you know, of course, then telling him I wanted the divorce, going through the process. When it came down to that piece, I felt more ready. I had more pieces in place, you know, the steps of figuring out my finances, the steps of, you know, of course, my boys at that point were a little older. And so custody wasn't a problem. So this second question, you know, it is a little different in my situation. But the actual time of the day that I told him, which when she says the leaving part, I'm going to equate for me was the day I told him that I was filing for divorce. And that particular day, I had decided to do it on a Saturday where he didn't have to go to work the next day. I was going to give him that space where he could have that day to process this. And I did, however, set it up to where I knew I only had 30 minutes in the house. I had an appointment I had to get to. And I knew I had a physical therapy appointment. So I had a 30-minute window, and that's the window I used because I didn't want to get roped into a 2 and 3 and 4 hour long circular conversation about this. So I had 30 minutes. And so that was very purposeful on my part. I gave him, you know, I gave him space for his reactions, and his reactions were what they were. They were all over the board, but I didn't internalize any of that. I just simply said, I am filing for divorce on Monday. And I left it that simple. And then I left and went to the physical therapist.
Yeah. I love that, having that 30-minute window. And so it can't drag on, your words taken out of context. So, you know, the circus is off. I would add too, that there is not one plan, one amazing plan that we all do.
No.
If there was, we'd all be doing it. It'd be written out and all you have to do is Google to find it. But it's very specific to your situation and kids and how old your kids are. And, you know your ex or soon to be ex best of how it's going to land. You know, is this just going to be a letter on the kitchen table and you take all your possessions and go? Or is there going to be a conversation? I do see a lot of clients that they want to write the long letter full of emotion and that's kind of their closure. And I kind of stop them. I'm like, you got to do what you got to do for your integrity of how you want to tie the bow on this relationship. But be careful, giving too much information can definitely be used against you down the road. I think if we could talk to ourselves, the selves of how we were a week before we left versus 2 years out of like, I wouldn't have, I would have just packed everything up and went, because right, the talking, the letters, it didn't, doesn't go anywhere. And in fact, it hurts you more about it.
I do think writing the letter is very healing. Just don't give it to them.
Right.
Write the letter. Okay. Write the letter because that's for you and what you need, but you're just opening the door to more abuse, to more guilting and shaming and blame shifting and gaslighting and all the things. So just, you're just adding fuel to the fire, but it can be very healing to you. You know, I do tell people often that if they're going to be mad, whether I do it in a text, do it by phone, write a letter, tell them in person, they're going to be mad no matter what way I do this. So don't try to find the right way for them. Mm-hmm. Find the right way for you.
Yeah. A lot of times too, knowing that a divorce is impending, coming down, like we don't want to think about it, right? That's that long period of for actually picking up the phone and calling an attorney, and not thinking about how you're going to leave, because you think that will push it away more, the inevitable. But you'd rather think about it, have a plan, gist of it, and not need it, versus to not think about it. And then you get to a point like, shoot, I should have been thinking about this longer, or something explodes or changes the direction, ups your timeline. And that you at least have a couple things, a couple places you can go where your things are, like how you are slowly moving things out of your house. They're out of your house. You're not scrambling at the last minute.
And when it came down then to fast forward, then what did it look like when the time came that he moved out and it was over? Honestly, you know, I expected, I don't know what I expected. If like there was going to be some big fanfare or like, it's over, I'm gonna throw a party. And none of that happened. None of that happened. It's like, yeah, there's no fireworks. Life just continued. Like it just, I went to bed and I got up the next day. Like it just, it really seemed almost surreal.
Put so much thought into it. And then, not wah. Yes. Nothing big happens.
Nothing big happened.
The second part of that question, talking about like the child's reflection of splitting time between the chaotic covert narcissistic parent and the stable one. I think it's hard. It's hard to see your children kind of leave you, I guess, and go what you know about this other person. But I'm going to... Someone called me the other day the queen of flipping things around, or the way of looking at things of, we're going to flip this around too, of looking at the wonderful contrast that your children will be able to see now of chaotic here, stable here, or, you know, able to speak your mind in a loving way here, or you just keep your mouth shut over there. And for so long when you were in the marriage, you picked up, blended, made excuses, pieced it together, swept it under the rug, and there was that blurriness. And now we're going to have a good contrast for the children to see. And it's hard, but just keep showing your unconditional love. And your children are not on the same timeline that you are. You've had a much more front row seat to this than they have. And you need to be gentle with them on what they see and how they reflect on it on their timeline.
Yeah, very true. Children who are growing up in an environment where they're walking on eggshells, they don't get the opportunity to learn what it feels like to not walk on eggshells. And I think that's the contrast you're describing. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes along with what you were saying. When you can go ahead and divorce and cause that divorce to happen, then you give them an opportunity to live in a home where they're not walking on eggshells. And see that difference. You know, they might not be able to verbalize it yet. Depends on their age. You know, they might not understand it, but they certainly feel it. And they're going to feel that difference. And so now, instead of walking on eggshells, you're able to provide them a home where they can start feeling emotional safety and what that feels like, so that as they grow and move into their own homes in their future, they have that as an example, as stable in their life. You know, my boys were a little bit, were older, And everybody, again, this is a very personal decision as to when you leave. I hear people all the time say, run, get out, run. Sometimes that's the right choice and sometimes it's not. It's going to depend on your situation. But for me, looking back, and I see now, so my boys were a little bit older, but now every time they came home from college, they came to my home. And they've been together, the three of us in the home, a lot now during their college years. And in so doing, I've been able to see now the difference that that makes, where we now have a home where people aren't walking on eggshells and there is that emotional safety. The level of trust that has built between the three of us is incredible. And I absolutely cherish that. That makes me look back and go, okay, I can really see that difference that would have been contrasted if the divorce had happened sooner.
Yeah. I've heard that walking on eggshells be like the equivalent of like white noise or static always playing in the house. And you don't know it's there until you turn it off. You're like, oh,
that's a what really good analogy. That? Yeah.
Constant hiss that was going on. So
yeah,
I like that analogy.
I like that analogy a lot. Now, so. All right. Well, thank you for those out there who are contributing questions to this, you know, series or whatever you want to call this that we're doing. We're just kind of rolling with Q&As. And I love that. Eleanor, thank you for making yourself available for this time to do this, you know, for our audience.
My pleasure. I look forward to the next one.
Yes, we will have more. We will continue this rolling forward. We will be putting posts about this in the Facebook group. So those that are out there on the Facebook, the Covert Narcissism group, do look for those posts. And if you have more questions to add onto our list, you know, it's a never ending, you know, I have people ask me often, how do you not run out of things to talk about? I don't think that's possible in this. So thank you everyone out there for listening. And I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing. You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG, as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing. The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.